Alrighty, what's going on, everybody? My name is Josh. Welcome to the Barca Blaugranas podcast. Today we have a very special guest. Kevin Williams is going to be joining us to chat a bit about the Barcelona-Bayern Munich match. We're going to talk about our old pal, our old buddy, Ronald Koeman. Kevin writes for the Barcelona football blog, and he was at the Barcelona-Bayern match. So we're going to get some firsthand experience of what the crowd was like, kind of talk about whether it's tactics or talents, all of that and more. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast if you are not subscribed, and I will talk to you guys here in a minute with Kevin. All right, thanks. Alrighty, everybody. Welcome to the Barca Blaugranas podcast. My name is Josh. I am joined by Kevin Williams, who was kind enough to join us the day after a flight home from Barcelona. Kevin, how are we doing?
Really well. Not at all jet lag. The food come down is still something of a shock. We discovered that Barcelona is vegan heaven. And being vegan, there were a number of amazing places that we tried, a couple of them. We got turned on to by Rick Sharma, noted football journalist. And weather was amazing. We rented a lovely apartment. Nothing wrong with it. The best trip ever. So it was cool.
Nice. So give us the one food that you're going to be thinking about in like 2 weeks, jealous that you can't have it anymore.
Everything from the pastries. We found this Venezuelan place that made these little sandwiches. They call them arepas, and they stuffed them with they have this plant-based chicken that, I mean, you had to really make sure they didn't get your food order wrong, because they're like, this has to be chicken. This is too good to not be chicken. And it was just, I mean, the food there was top to bottom, just every bit as wonderful as I remember it. It's hard because, I mean, here in America, we have good food, but like the ingredients are different. And it's just like France to Spain, it's that same sort of difference where it's like, okay. So yeah, I mean, just one thing, it's hard to nail down one thing. It was just this fantastic gustatory debauch for like 8 days. We just tried to eat everything.
There you go. So before we were recording, you were talking about how you went to the Barcelona B match and then, of course, the lovely Barcelona match. And I do kind of want to get a sense of, like, what was the atmosphere like before the Bayern match? Like, did the crowd seem excited, nervous, a bit of both?
They seemed resigned, right? I mean, it was like this, not as much march to the gallows as they understood where their team was, where their team is, and they understood where Bayern was and is. They understood that the best possible result would have been a 0-0 that would have required a perfect match, which as we both saw, they did not play. The crowd was just sort of like, we're going to watch something. And I mean, the people who didn't know better that were hopeful, but there was very little hope detected in people speaking Catalan and or Spanish.
Was there a moment where things flipped, I guess, in terms of kind of the feeling around the stadium? Because I know, like, for me at least, I thought Barcelona played like pretty well in the first half. They obviously, the Eric Garcia mistake kind of led to a goal. But overall, I thought they didn't look horrible in the first half. And so did things kind of flip in the second half where it felt more inevitable? Like, okay, now we're just holding on for dear life. Let's hope this isn't, 6-0 and that we can keep it in decent range.
So I recall the post-match comments by Nagelsmann. Albert, he said, yeah, for the first 10 minutes, we were sort of weird. Then we made a couple of adjustments and things got straightened out. I mean, that was sort of very evident live. And for those who've never been to a live Barcelona match, it's like it's really impossible to describe. You're seeing a fraction on TV of what's really going on, and it's startling the difference. Like, I mean, one thing you don't see is just so there's this weird sort of resistance to physical capabilities that the Barca fan base, we are fixated on the idea of a, like, Pedri saves the world, right? And so to have the Bayern players all, as Michael Cox described them in his really good piece for the Athletic, you know, they were bigger, stronger, faster, and just as technically skilled. So it was this sort of truly met against boys. And, you know, the first 10 minutes, Barca got a little stuck in, moved the ball around some. I mean, but all of the flaws in the way they approached matches were easily exploited by Bayern, who looked like, you know, they were playing with two extra men. They always had a place to put the ball. They always had running room with the ball. I mean, that Muller goal, I mean, you know, nobody closed them down. And you could see Busquets sort of, you know, trying to run in his, you know, very gangly sort of, you know, slow motion way. But I mean, nobody closed them down. And Bayern could do what they wanted. And they really weren't playing full gas. And you could really see that live in the stadium. They were not 100%. They were just cruising.
Yeah, and that was the scary thing, is you look at the gap between the two clubs, and it just didn't feel like Bayern were, like, I think I heard someone say turning the screws talking about it this week. I just didn't feel like they kicked it into that final gear. And I guess a lot has been discussed about the gap between the two. Like, there was an expected gap heading in. We saw that gap occur. There was not a single shot on target from Barcelona. Was this about talent or tactics for you?
Man, it's about everything. Talent, tactics, age, physical capabilities, movement. This was as comprehensive. I mean, 3-0 was a flattering scoreline. I mean, you know, Bayern, had they really hit the gas, could have laid another, you know, 3 or 4 goals on Barcelona easily. It was, and they got to every 50-50 ball. Every contested move was won by them. Every contest was won by them in the air or on the ground. The biggest problem right now, I think, with Barcelona, aside from having way too many old people in key positions, is that they lack belief. They never looked like they were thinking they had a shot. When you look at how, and I've now forgotten who drew against PSG, when you watched how they played the match, right? I mean, they were jam-packed with belief, right? And they ran and they worked and they shoved and they fought and they believed they could get a result. At no time did it feel like Barcelona believed they could get a result. And that was the strangest thing about that match, is how far that team has fallen psychologically.
Yeah, and I think it was Bruges that drew with PSG, but the
Bruges. Yeah.
Yeah, the lack of belief, I guess, is something that's, that I think we saw like a little bit of last year, even though there was still some hope, like, oh, maybe Messi can save us. Now that the whole Messi can save us thing is gone, I guess with the influx of youth that Koeman insists upon, deservedly so, is, I guess I expected some sort of like youthful, I guess like irrational faith or irrational like care. And it doesn't seem like, I don't know if it's like the strange mix of the old guards still there who they kind of, they don't see things with rose-colored glasses, maybe, but then there's this influx of youth, and it doesn't seem like even the young players believe all that much.
Oh, well, you did see things really pick up when Gavi and Demir came in, and then they picked up even more when Balde came in, because, I mean, These guys, like, I'm 18. Nobody told me these guys are better than us. I mean, Gavi was running around and getting stuck in. Demir was trying things. I mean, Balde was fantastic. I mean, much better than he was in the Barca B match on Sunday. So, I mean, yeah, there was that drive, that energy, but I mean, that drive and energy wasn't matched by the compatriots. And I mean, I think you now have a traumatized team. So, like, I think PK, Busquets, certainly Jordi Alba, Sergio Berto. I mean, when that much significant failure happens, you flinch. And they were playing off the back foot the whole match. They weren't driving at Bayern at all. They didn't try to put them under pressure at all. And so it was just a team that seemed to lack, well, that lacked of belief. And I don't know. I mean, I know how you fix that. And some of it is obviously getting rid of the traumatized players, but it's also this psychological. I mean, I don't know if they have a team psychologist. I know that Luis Enrique did, but they need one. My Lord, they need one.
Yeah, honestly. So on a positive note, right, trying to glean something from this somewhat devastating result, even though we all kind of expected it. Who stood out for you from the Barcelona side? It has to be one of the young guys, right? Like, I mean, there's no way.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Gavi was wonderful. Fearless, smart on the ball and energetic off it. I thought Balde was a delight. He just tried to make that flank his own. I think that, let's see, in terms of first team players, I think that the Araujo came to play. I think that Pedri did as well, but it was, you know, he looked like a mascot out there among the Bayern players. And it was striking. I mean, there was a one moment he faced up against Upamecano, and it just looked like a youth player playing a grown-up. And I mean, and the Bayern defender just, you know, calmly took the ball, didn't even like rough him up. He's just like, please give me that. And just, I took it and walked away. And it was the most, and, you know, it's not like, so I think that, you know, those players were fun to watch. And I think that De Jong was, Frankie, was incredibly frustrated. And I, Michael Cox got at some of that in his piece. And you could really see it in the, from the stands, that he wanted more from his teammates and seemed disappointed that more was not forthcoming.
Yeah. So the internet blogosphere is obviously just all the reports from Spain talking about 2 a.m. meetings after Koeman sacking, all that sorts of stuff. This result wasn't surprising to any of us.
No.
Do you think Koeman makes the season?
Well, I mean, so it's kind of like when you're buying a car, right? You think, okay, A, how much does the car I have suck? And B, is there a better car, right, that I can lay my hands on? You know, right now, I mean, when I survey the managerial landscape, if they fire him, who's available, right? I mean, people talk about Gallardo. Who knows if he's available? I would have to think if he was. I mean, for me, right now, firing him, as satisfying as it would be, doesn't make a lot of sense because there's no one better to step in. Because, I mean, look, the team is broken. And if you're talking about the sort of comprehensive rehab that needs to happen, not only with talent, but with psychology, I mean, bringing somebody in no October and saying, hey, here's the keys to this broken down bus, right? Let's see what you can do, is not an ideal. I mean, that you're setting a new manager up for failure. That said, does he make the season? No. I mean, I think he's gone by January window. It would shock me if he, I mean, mind you, the team could turn around, start playing amazing football. We don't yet know the difference that Fati and Dembele will make. But you could see moments during that Bayern match where those wings were just begging for a player to make a run and a place to put the ball. And instead, all they had was the statue named Luke de Jong standing in the middle watching balls go over his head. It was bleak. So, I mean, if those two players come back, then suddenly the attack looks very different. I mean, the other thing is, does Koeman have the courage to start Nico over Busquets? And I think that he should find that courage from somewhere, because it is, I mean, yes, Busquets is an icon. He's dazzling with the ball at his feet, blah, blah, et cetera. But he can't move. He can't move. And so his immobility creates so many imbalances, especially with Jordi Alba basically spending most of his match in the opposition box. It's just he's too much to overcome for that midfield. He also creates problems for the back line. I think with Nico in there, that first goal doesn't happen.
Yeah, and that's just so you perfectly started off the conversation after my question about if not Ronald, then who, right? And that's kind of the question for the last few years we've had to ask ourselves as we've, you know, cycled through managers, right? Is when we fire this guy, like, who's the next person we're going to bring in? And I think if you look at Barcelona's overall roster from right now to when Koeman initially came in, I don't think anyone would say it's better for sure. I would say it's obviously worse. Even if you take Messi off the table, I still think it's worse. And so, yes, like, you could argue maybe his tactics aren't exactly what you'd like to see. But when I see Sat Koeman, I'm like, for what? Right? Even if you brought in your dream manager, you're bringing him into, like you said, kind of broken down bus. And it's like, how is that going to, one, how's that manager going to be able to thrive? Is he going to leave probably a better job if he's a better manager to come to the pizzazz of Barcelona, obviously? But you're coming to a club that has money issues, a club that for the foreseeable future isn't going to be more talented than its European counterparts. And so I just don't understand the appeal of, even if, like, I just don't understand the appeal of sacking Koeman at all this year, even if they're playing horrible. Like, I you're just going to bring in another caretaker that's just going to get sacked in another 16 months.
Yeah, and the thing is, I mean, when you think about the overall neglect that has brought us here, right? I mean, you know, really a team overhaul should have begun after Rome. It certainly should have begun after Anfield. And still, here we are. I mean, it is completely inexcusable that Piqué is still considered by many their best center back. He isn't, but that he starts every match because there's no clear-cut alternative, and he's like 8,000 years old in football years. I mean, that's inexcusable. Busquets. I mean, so back when Oriol Busquets was a thing before the major injury, man, he was fantastic. And the clear heir apparent, and then he went down with a major injury. But people have this addiction to Busquets that I just don't understand, given his current state. I mean, that doesn't even get into the fullbacks. I mean, I'm sorry, but Dest should be an apprentice to a better fullback until he learns the game. And Alba is just not up to it on any standard except making that one blind pass to where Messi used to be. I mean, I just, it's grim. And I mean, there are answers. you know, I think that that, you know, Koeman could like go full on youth and, you know, not play any, like, you know, just sit the geezers. And at least, yeah, you'll get dumb mistakes. You'll get weird goals conceded, but I mean, you'll get energy, you'll get life, and you'll get a hopeful sign for the future. Right now, it's just all these old people oozing around. And, you know, people, it's funny, people were riding Sergi Roberto really hard after the match. And they were in the stands as well. And while, and I watched it with Levon, and we were both like, man, he's grim. But he was responsible for none of the goals, right? I mean, his only problem right now is he's lost that step that he had that made him sort of like that useful everywhere man. So right now, once he lost that step, you know, that little physical capability he had, he now has none. And so he's just a turnstile out there. I don't know. I mean, so many questions, the answers are clear-ish, but I mean, you've really got to overhaul everything. But as I wrote in my post-match, right, I mean, when you have a club being run like a local butcher shop, I mean, who's going to make those changes, right? I mean, there's like, FC Barcelona is not a modern institution in any way except social media, sort of. And so when you look at the work that has to happen, right, and this frankly semi dim-witted dogmatism, right, that surrounds the way everybody expects the team to play tactically. I mean, nobody plays like Barcelona does in Europe anymore. There's a reason, right? But people still are, well, you know, if we play, you know, the right positional football and you move the ball right, you know, things will happen. No, because I mean, Bayern is stronger, faster, bigger. You know, Chelsea, stronger, faster, bigger. PSG, stronger, faster, bigger. Down the list, City, Liverpool. I mean, every top European side now is playing this dynamic, modern game. And here's Barcelona, right, just kind of stroking the ball around, you hope a magic will happen. It's not going to happen. It's that era is done. So I don't know. I mean, fixing the club, it's fixable, but not with the people currently running it.
Yeah, there you go. Last thing I wanted to talk to you about was, I guess this news broke. I guess it's been a few days now when Joan Laporta was talking about Javier Tebas and his comments on Messi's departure, for it, that he said it wasn't for financial reasons, and that he feels Barcelona have been psychologically kidnapped. I think I read that correct, by Real Madrid. One, have they been psychologically kidnapped? And two, do you, I guess, just what's your perspective on Javier Tebas's comments and kind of how La Liga perceives Barcelona?
So I don't think that they've been kidnapped, but I do think that they're being held hostage by aspiration. I mean, Florentino is going to sign Mbappe next summer. Wanted to splash, whether that was hubris or not, up to 200 mil for him. He picked up Camavinga. What a player for a song. They have a glittering new stadium to play in, right? I mean, so they are like the rich neighbor that Barcelona looks at and says, how is it going to be like that? And so they try to emulate that neighbor. And so I think that the Super League thing with rejecting the CBC deal, I mean, I think they're held hostage by their own sort of need to keep up with the Joneses. And so it's, I mean, I think, look, so people are writing off Tebas automatic, right? My thinking is, what does he gain by lying about this? And once you ask yourself that question, then it leads to a number of other very uncomfortable questions and a couple of answers that maybe people don't want to face. Mind you, they're all full of it. The question right now is a degree, right? And I mean, you know, that's hard to sort.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of all I had for you. What are you working on right now for the site? Kind of what's your kind of, yeah, just what are you working on for the site right now?
So right now, nothing, because my pieces sort of come from this thought I have, and then a half hour later there's a thousand words. My process is pretty organic that way. Like, I mean, the post-match took 25 minutes to write on a tablet. So I don't really work on things as much as look for things that make me want to start thinking with a keyboard. You know, I think that right now I'm really fascinated by the belief people have in Laporta. I'm really fascinated by that. He's done nothing to inspire that faith. He's done nothing to instill belief. And that weird video message the other day, I mean, I it's like, what the hell was that? And so that really interests me right now.
Okay. And so I'm glad you brought that up. We can talk about that for another minute or two. So is that belief purely based off of his past? And I guess my question would be like, I guess I don't really know what he could have done differently since he's been elected to bring sort of like to bring doubt.
So yes, it's all about his past, right? I mean, basically he was there when lightning struck. And so do you get full, I mean, yes, he made a Guardiola decision. He's made a number of decisions that helped that lightning strike. But yeah, it's his past, right? And his future. I mean, if you believe their fun with numbers versus Bartomeu's fun with numbers, I recall it was the exact same thing when they took over that, oh my God, we're in this huge amount of debt, we can't afford to make encore copies. And Laporta was saying, no, we showed a profit, and here it is, right? So both sides are having fun with numbers. I think that for me, I want transparency. That's all I want right now from him. I want him to own his decisions, to talk about the direction he sees for the club.
Yeah. 100% agree. And I think the one area that he was both very transparent and also not transparent soon enough was with Messi.
Yes.
In my opinion, at least.
Yeah, well, I thought he should have come right out and said, this was my choice to not keep Messi, right? And I feel like he sort of obliquely said that. But he didn't just like step up and say, yeah, it was my call, and here's why I did it. And you have your flow charts, you have your numbers, and you make that decision make sense. Because right now, especially when you hear this blather about 70 million for Danny Olmo, because it's like, oh, good Lord, really? I mean, then it really doesn't make sense, right? I mean, so right now, nothing about the Messi departure makes sense. Mind you, I think that they are a better overall group without Messi, even if they're less dangerous, because right now you don't have one player standing around, okay, guys, when the ball is ready, I'll be over. Right. I mean, but yeah, he's right now he needs to really own that more. And I'm as days go by, I more and more regret that Fault didn't have a chance in that election. because I think his decisions and choices would have been very interesting.
Yeah, more of a wild card. So only time will tell. Kevin, thank you for joining us off of a fun week of travel that was, I'm sure, both enjoyable, hectic, tiring, all of the above. Get some rest.
All right. Thanks for having me. It was huge fun.